I love her. I love her very much. I've never had a feeling like
shut
this.
Up.
And speaking of love, weren't you and I going to talk about that today?
Yes, we were.
But, well, couldn't you manage to arrange your time so you could have a little fun, too?
All right, let's get it.
Let's get it.
I can't stop saying that.
I don't know what you just said.
Get it?
Yeah, what is that? What do you mean?
Now that I have to explain it, I don't know how to explain it. But it's just like...
is it like, let's get it?
Let's go do this. Yeah.
Oh.
You said that so simply. What?
But did you say let's... But what did you say? Let's get it?
It's because, guys, anyone, if this makes it into the cut, it's because the reason I don't make sense is because Kat has custody of the brain cell that we share today.
It's the time of day where I take it over.
Yep. I handed it. I express mailed it. It's a really small envelope.
Big enough for a single brain cell.
That was like a really good, like you were giving me like the intro to Powerpuff Girls type voice.
Oh my God. Thank you. I was practicing. I showered before this and I was practicing some like voiceover voices in the shower.
Can you give us a sample?
Oh, what did I say in the shower? I can't remember what I said, but I was doing a really deep like Valley Girl voice where I was like, oh yeah, no, for sure. I was like, yeah, no, for sure.
You know the Trisha
Paytas?
What is that reminding me of? You know what that reminds me of?
What?
That one Vine that's like, I don't even remember. I was like crazy back then.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to emulate is that girl.
I actually love the way Trisha Paytas talks too.
I was really fucked up back then.
You were giving me Trisha Paytas, and then you have to like end with like the vocal fry.
Yeah.
Or it's more of like a like that.
I don't
like
know.
Like a door closing slowly and sleepily.
Like in an old Victorian home.
Yep. And there's just like a baby ghost behind it. It's just John Mulaney in a long t-shirt behind it.
On that note, welcome to VomCom.
The podcast where we talk about the rom-coms that we love to hate.
And hate to love.
I did a really good dramatic...
Thank you. I did a really big swallow.
Glug, glug, glug. You guys are really getting the ASMR.
I was just about to say.
Full experience.
Apologies to anybody who fucking hates that. Before we get so carried away, because I can already tell we are going to, let's do a land acknowledgement.
Yes. Okay.
We'd like to acknowledge that the recording of this podcast takes place both in the region of Peel, which is part of the treaty lands and territory of the Mississaugas of the Credit,
and Ottawa, which was built on unceded Anishinaabe Algonquin Nation territory.
Whew, I got heated.
You good?
Yeah. I shouldn't have worn a sweater. I should never wear a sweater.
I really do like that sweater you're wearing, though.
It's Thanks. Cute. I wore yellow in honor of Kate Hudson's yellow dress.
Oh, good segue. The movie that we're doing this week, which is
How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
A classic.
Thing that I was thinking about. If we were to dress up for this movie, what would the fuck hell would we have worn? Backless shirts? Dresses?
Oh my God, literally, there's not one thing she wears that is... Actually, I do know what I would have worn. A white wife beater and blue jeans that are folded down for no reason at the waist.
Oh my God. That's what I was going to say. Like, I was like, a wife beater
with the top
with
button
no...
undone.
Yeah. I saw that at the end when he was dropping her off and her jeans were folded over. I was like, she was like that the entire time?
Yeah. And she's like posting up at this like nice like building with a doorman.
With her nice
And he's like, so this is
doorman.
Your place? And she's like, this is my place. And I'm like, your outfit does not agree with that statement, but okay.
Just
she's wearing like a Knicks hoodie. A wife beater and these like busted jeans, girl.
A wife beater.
They were trying to show that she's not like the other girls. She's a cool girl. She's clumsy. She eats big sandwiches and bacon.
Oh my
God. She likes sport.
The not like other girls and the cool girl shtick is so strong in this movie.
It's heavy.
It's heavy.
Yep.
Not as like bad as it has been in other movies, but like this one, most deaths.
Yeah. And they definitely But they even did it such that, like, she's the cool girl, but she's still got stuff to learn from the cool guy. Because he taught her how to ride a motorcycle. And I was like, look, I'm not even that mad at that, that this one, because I really like this movie.
Oh, my God. Okay, so rewatching it last night. Okay, one, obviously obsessed with this movie when I was younger.
Obviously.
Two, watching this movie again as an adult, you're like, yo, this feels too intimate to be watching, because their chemistry, dude, is out of this world. Like,
that's what you were thinking? Because what I was thinking is, why is she writing political pieces about the Middle East that are not being greenlit by her editor? That's what I wanted to know.
Oh, I also had questions about that, but I also...
So many cues.
The fucking last sentence of her piece is, so, me as a white woman, this is how you bring peace to Tajikistan. And then the title of the article that she wrote, How to Bring Peace to Tajikistan. Like, okay, Andy Anderson, with your master's from Columbia in journalism, but not political science. Anyways, right. I just was like, I wish it wasn't that article.
Yeah.
Or that wasn't her stance. But, you know, I get the point, like, that they were trying to make.
The way that she presented, like, the way that that line was written, where she gives the... I'm a serious journalist and I shouldn't be working at this universe's version of Cosmopolitan, is very funny to me, because it could be a line from an SNL skit. Yeah. It was something to the tune of, I have a master's in journalism from Columbia, and I'm just doing a stepping stone until I can talk about the real things that I like. Politics, religion, Tajikistan. So...
Yep.
Also, so vague. And it was like, Andy, what are your stances on any of these things? Quick cue. Like, imagine the sequel to this where she actually goes into journalism and she's like, I'm here for the politics.
Oh my God. Like, I don't know if it's just that she was a little bit hopeful that, like, she would prove herself as, like, being a serious writer, and then they would give her the free rein to bring in topics that the reader should know about, but then also be like a well-rounded woman who is interested in shoes and the fashion trends, but then also know what's happening in Tajikistan. Like, I don't know if that was her expectation, but literally she's surrounded by things that are like how to get a better body and how to talk
how to
out
the
of a
one
ticket
the one the article that was hung up behind Catherine Hahn's character when they're eating salad for lunch, and it says how learn how to love your legs.
Yeah. I was like, so when do you think that you could write that and then talk about Tajikistan?
Genuine question, Andy.
Genuine question, Andy, because then I think you're setting yourself up for disappointment, buddy boy. Yeah. I think we should talk about the premise of this movie.
Right,
Molly,
yeah,
well,
of course.
Molly, what happens in this movie? It's a movie called How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, which...
The broads? Yeah. I mean, don't we all want to know this,
don't we all
answer
know?
To this question? Spoiler, apparently, she doesn't even lose him in the end.
Spoiler
alert.
So she
didn't even succeed.
Her article is
task.
Junk.
Junk science, but she's into politics anyways, so she never said science was her thing. We've been established this. But basically, the premise of this movie is that we have... young ingenue Kate Hudson and a pre-serious acting days Matthew McConaughey, which we will never forget that he did so many rom-coms.
Oh,
I will never
God.
Forget.
Honestly, though, like a gift to straight women everywhere and gay men.
Yeah.
And people who are attracted to Matthew McConaughey.
He's like, who, I mean, look, I used to think that he was an acquired taste, but I think he's just like, he's kind of like the... Like, what am I trying to get? He's like the chocolate ice cream of like Hollywood dudes. Like, everyone kind of likes him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like the unequivocal king of doing the bamboozled face.
Mm-hmm.
I have so many screenshots that I took from this movie of him just being absolutely flabbergasted. And I will share them with you guys on the Instagram.
Thank you.
But yeah, so the idea behind this movie is that, Kate Hudson, playing Andy Anderson, is a advice columnist, and her boss has tasked her with the article of writing about what not to do to keep a relationship with a straight man. So she's going to go through all of these, like, faux pas, and it's going to push the man away from her. And she has to do it, even though she's a journalist, she has to have this play out in her real life.
She has to.
With a real person.
She has to manipulate a real person. Her literal boss is telling her to go whore herself out.
Yeah.
Go find
her,
a man.
Her boss is, like, everyone's boss and coworkers are way too invested in both Andy's and Ben's personal lives. So on the flip side, we have Andy, who is, she needs to find some hapless guy to drive crazy and make break up with her. And then on the other side, we have this ad executive named Ben, who is played by Matthew McConaughey, and he has the task of making a woman fall deeply in love with him in the conveniently the exact same span of time as Andy has been given by her editor to make a guy break up with her. Mm-hmm. So it's the perfect storm. And the two of them are pushed together by one of his, both of whom are played by the evil Siamese cats from... from fucking Lady and the Tramp. Those two ladies, so like Shalom Harlow, who had the shortest ever acting career, is like the one who had like the finger waves in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
She was slightly taller and she was very cat-like looking, but like every scene that the two of them are in together, they're like moving together and they're like look so conspiratorial. They were one of my favorite parts of this movie. Anyways, so lo and behold, they meet at a party and immediate chemistry. They immediately kick it off.
Yeah
sure. Okay,
sure.
And then chaos ensues.
They meet
because...
in a really brightly lit bar, which I hated. I was like, is this a fucking office space? Why are the lights on? This is a bar.
No, Kat. It's the go-to hangout for the upwardly mobile. So they meet at this bar and they like immediately, it's like chemistry off the charts, even though I found the conversation a little cringe, the like one word conversation that they have.
Oh, yeah. It's like
it got a little cringe. It was fine at first.
It is cringe. Like watching as an outside party, it's definitely cringe. But, like, again, the way that they're looking at each other, and it's just, like, every moment they have with each other where they're looking at each other or when Matthew McConaughey is looking at her, I'm like, this isn't appropriate. I'm watching two people fuck.
Literally.
Literally.
Especially one scene that we'll get to later that I was like, I feel like I shouldn't be... Me and the doorman have to go. We can't be looking at this. Mm-hmm. And they weren't even... They were literally standing like 6 feet apart, but it was so far too much.
So many times they're just talking to each other or he's looking at her and I really am like, I can't be here. I gotta pause this movie. Can we talk about, like, we will get into it. I just wanted to note how obviously the lack of representation in this movie. This movie came out in 2003. The lack of diversity in this film. We love that one of the Judy's, Spears, I can't remember. She is a black woman and she reminds me of a young Vanessa Williams. She's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Love her. She plays evil so well. She's a person of color with lines, and then this Asian girl in Andy's...
The other journalist?
Yeah. This Asian girl in Andy's office also has lines. But then the boss, who is very much the whitest woman I've ever seen, the whitest, most translucent, pale skin,
very much doing the Orientalism thing,
very much doing the Orientalism thing, has them take off their shoes when they're in a meeting, and then is always wearing, what's this type of dress called? Like, this was the big thing in like the 90s and the early 2000s.
It's gonna really bug me if I can't think of what it's called. It's got the little collar.
Yeah, I just referred to it as a Chinese collar when I was making a note of it.
It's actually, you know what, I know for a fact because I went to fashion school and I had to get something out of it. It's called a Mandarin collar.
Oh yes.
So what is that dress called? It's called a it's like two syllables.
I don't know if I've ever known what the dress is called, but when I see the style of dress, I'm always like, yeah, I know exactly what
it is.
What
called
you're doing.
Chongsam. I'm probably mispronouncing that.
Okay. The style of dress,
but like
the little,
that's...
the little dress she was
yeah,
wearing.
Yeah, like, so there's like, like, that style of dress was, like, so popular in, like, the late 90s, early 2000s, like, mm-hmm. mainstream in the West. And, like, there was, like, the sleeve version and the sleeveless version.
Yeah.
And it was without fail some kind of, like, satin with a crane or a dragon.
Yeah. Wove,
like, embroidered. And it was, like, she was, so she also had this, like, little, this little bob going on, too. Mm-hmm. And it was very much, like, supposed to be.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe, like, they had cast an Asian woman and then she dropped out at the last minute and they were like, well, we just need to find someone who fits all of her costumes. So they just found this woman and didn't change anything else.
It literally could just be that. It also is just, like, a very big example of how culture can be fashion, of how other cultures can be high fashion, but then not be put on, like, colored bodies. Because even her office, it's not even about, like, the dresses she wore, like, her desk is her furniture is, like, vaguely oriental. She has, like, a Chinese style type piece of art that's a, like, a statue that's a horse statue. What's happening? I'm having a stroke.
Call the bombulance. You know what it is? It's almost like, to me, almost a little bit insulting, even.
It is.
That you would have someone, like, you have someone who they don't even really commit to figuring out the culture before, like, just taking it piecemeal. They just, you know, well, let's throw some kind of calligraphy art up on the wall, and then we'll get a horse statue and put her in a cheongsam and, you know, make people take their shoes off when they enter and take a deep breath. And it's like, what in the pastiche is happening right now?
Yeah. So I just want to point that out because it wasn't even like there's one cheongsam dress that she likes. It's like all of her outfits were very much Asian inspired, specifically Chinese inspired. So literally just if anything, cast an Asian person and then have them be from actual Asia so that it makes sense that they're bringing all this stuff over and it's not just like a
white
woman.
Like the westernized version of it, kind of pell-mell mixed in with that, like, corporate quote-unquote family culture of, like, okay, family, gather around everyone, let's talk about, like, okay, we're all a family here, like, we're all committed except you don't get benefits but we're a family so you shouldn't ask for them.
But anyways,
okay.
I just wanted
okay, and deep breath.
I just wanted to bring that up. So now we can go into and also the reason why Andy has the idea for this article is because one of her close friends who also works with them, she's a mess at the beginning of the movie. She just got dumped after a weak relationship goes tits up and she's obviously crying and blah blah blah. And she's like played by Catherine Hahn, Michelle. Played by Catherine Hahn, who is a gift to this world and wasted.
Oh my god, I love.
Like, did her the Lord's work in this movie, but wasted, you know?
She did give what she was supposed to give in this movie, in as much as every face that she could possibly. Every second on screen, she worked it.
She did.
And also, I know that her apartment was supposed to be, like, kind of cringe and granny-ish, but how cute was that couch? Like, the blue and white
Very
couch.
Very cute.
So comfy looking.
Mm-hmm. She was so cute. I love her. And
I loved her outfits. She was, like, the only one wearing color in this whole movie.
Yeah. And, like, the other woman that's their friend, she's a very beautiful. I found her so funny, and I wish she had more lines. Yeah.
Drama, drama, drama. What was her character's name? Do you know?
No.
Yeah, I wish she was in more of it. I liked her.
I don't know her character's name. I just know her as the drama, drama, drama girl. The one who is in Catherine Hahn is how I know her.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so Catherine Hahn is the mess that basically Andy emulates to lose this guy, because everything Catherine Hahn does in a relationship ends up making her lose the guy that she's seeing. And that's the way that she is that she's overbearing, she's overly emotional, she's like wears her heart on her sleeve, she's too clingy, all of that stuff, because obviously she's a very like emotional and vulnerable person, and she doesn't like keep to herself or treads lightly around the men who get skittish and scared at any sign of emotion. So that's why her relationships don't work. So in this meeting, they...
You know, her relationships didn't work because she couldn't find anyone that was going to match her energy.
Exactly. Queen. Exactly. You know,
Catherine Hahn, sweetie, you did nothing wrong.
You did nothing wrong.
You've never done anything wrong in your whole life, ever. and I know this.
Yeah.
And I love you.
We know this and we love you. So, yeah, it gets brought up in a meeting that she was dumped. And then the boss, Lana, the boss, is trying to get somebody to write about her life because Catherine Hahn doesn't want to. And then that's when Andy jumps in and is like, no, I'll do it. And I'll do an experiment. So, yeah, that's how that comes about. And then cut to them going to the bar and both of them meeting each other.
Let's go to the bar. One thing that we like kind of skipped over that I want to bring up just because of the script, like the dialogue in this scene, is that one of the first times that you see Ben interact with his male coworkers, he goes into his office and one of his coworkers is in there and his coworker goes, hey, daddy, how was your night? Yeah. And then he says something, oh, not too bad. And he calls his coworker Kitty Cat.
Yep, he calls him Kitty Cat. He's like, hey, Kitty Cat. And Adam Goldberg is like, hey, daddy. And I was like, what is happening?
I was so shocked.
I was so shocked. And then he was
I really liked it at the same time. I liked that dialogue that they just played it off so casually. No big deal. So did
I. I loved it, too. I was just like, why? Right off the bat. 10 minutes in, I hear the word daddy. I'm upset.
You can't escape from it.
I can't escape. So, yeah, so Adam Goldberg calls him daddy, asks him how his night was, and Ben's like, oh, it's fine. And then Adam Goldberg's
like, have many orgies last night?
Yeah, had a lot of orgies. And, like, this plays into every lead man in a rom-com is always the guy's, is always the guy that women want to be with and guys want to be. So, like, it's always two best friends.
I love that. Maybe I'm just, like, not cluing in to what most women want, but I'm just I look at the concept of women want him, men want to be him, and to me the things that would kind of dictate both of those categories, if they were made into a Venn diagram, they would be two separate circles.
They would be 100% two separate circles.
Yeah,
because usually in real life that's usually not how that goes.
Yeah. But that's definitely, you kind of, like, hit the nail on the head that's how they play him off as, like, this. He's this kind of, like, doodly guy, and he, for a living, sells, like, beer and pool tables and keggers and, I don't know. Like, literally in his apartment, there's a neon sign that just says cold beer.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah. I was like, they're really selling this one. They're really pushing this one home.
I couldn't stop looking at the multiple CD player, like the
that was
the sleek jukebox,
and it was like touch controlled.
Yeah,
like you touch the top of it to stop it playing. That was cool.
That was cool.
I never seen anything like that. That was some Xenon Girl of the Future shit up in Matthew McConaughey's apartment.
Oh man!
So they meet at this party. Okay, I just wanted to jump back just to mention the daddy kitty cat moment. So. The next thing you see is that there's, like, they go to this bar, this New York's go-to for the upwardly mobile. They go there to find a man to victimize and
to ruin his
and
life.
Manipulate. And who happens to be there but Matthew McConaughey, his boss, and these two women who are his peers. That is the 8 o'clock alarm. These two women who are his peers who are vying for this account to advertise diamonds, which would be the biggest account for their advertising firm. It's very desirable. Matthew McConaughey's character thinks he's entitled to it because he gave them the tip off that they were looking for a new firm. Mm-hmm. But these women are the ones who specialize in luxury, so they're kind of there. They had this meeting with their boss to talk about the pitch, and then
they have a work meeting at a bar also.
That's what I thought, like, growing up watching, like, Sex and the City and movies like this. I really thought that's what it would be like to have, like, work meetings at the bar and stuff.
Yeah.
Have wet lunches, you know? And So he kind of like dive, what do you call it? He dive bombs. He like hijacks the meeting. Yeah, that they're he having. Hijacks. They're he like, shows what are you up. Doing here? He's like, I should have been invited. And they were like, but you weren't. So why are you here? And this whole meeting is an HR nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
Because Shalom Harlow is like soft key seducing her boss to try and mm-hmm. get this account. Yep. Which, by the way, should have been theirs from the get go.
It should have been. And like, I get where Ben is coming from, where he was like, this is my tip and I'm trying to branch out and do other things. I get it, mm-hmm. Ben. I get it.
I'm sympathetic to both parties, but I am.
Do I love how many opportunities he had to hijack their meeting and kind of talk over them at said meetings after hijacking them already and kind of like mansplaining to them diamonds and what women want and all that stuff. I don't love that. I know in literally, his mind he thinks that he's a feminist and he loves women and he respects them, but also you are literally not letting women talk.
I think that's like what the viewer is supposed to think too, is to be like, this is a guy, he deserves it. He found the tip, blah, blah, blah. All I could see was that his boss was like allowing this bad behavior over and over again.
Yeah, because he's like, Ben's really confident and talking over people, and that's how you get what you want.
Ben's idea was shitty. Go frost yourself.
Oh my Yikes. God, when he first said frost yourself, I was like,
it just doesn't make any sense. There's no context for it. And then literally you get, you know, when his boss shouts out the window, hey, women of New York. He does say New York. Women of New York. Go frost yourself. And you hear some lady go,
frost this.
And that is what I thought. That was my first reaction.
Exactly what I thought. I thought he was going to go.
Stick this in your pipe and frost it.
I thought he was going to go the way of like, women are always waiting for men to buy them diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
When really, in this day and age, women should be buying themselves diamonds. I thought that's what he was going to say. Because of us, I can't remember the line that he says, but there's a line in it where he starts talking about how all these women around are looking for someone to buy them a diamond, but they can do it themselves. Something like that, you know?
Yeah, I remember that.
So I thought that's the way that he was going to go about it, but no.
You know what I would have done?
What?
If I was Benny Benny Boo Boo, I would have... I would have given the pitch of, you know, fuck diamonds entirely. And I would have obviously got fired for it. But
you would have lost
consider
the
following. All these women are out here waiting for men to buy them diamonds when they could be waiting for men to buy them more sustainable gemstones.
I like that. That was the
real potential lost in this pitch.
Yeah, I like that he included in his, like, conversation with his guys when he first walks into the office. Oh my god, we didn't even talk about a scene that happens in his office while he's talking. But he comes in and he's like, diamonds are as accessible as any other thing. He's like, diamonds are not rare. Diamonds are not rare. They're easily accessible. The only reason why they are rare and they are commodified is because
marketing.
Because people have made them seem rarer than they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like that they included that, because I'm like, oh, so we all know that this is bullshit. Great.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that happens in that office is that he shows up to work. One, he shows up to work on his motorcycle, and then
in
he
the
takes
world's
off
ugliest leather jacket.
In his leather jacket and a t-shirt, and he fucking takes off his helmet. And I remember watching last night, he took off his helmet and I just saw his like tan skin and his blonde hair. And I was like, oh boy.
He did a sharp intake.
I did, I really did. And the person I was watching with, he just laughed.
There's something so likable about Matthew McConaughey. I don't know what it is.
He's so charming, man. Like, it's
like
gross.
You know what it is? It's like he's got like so much. It's like head so full, but really underneath the surface. And on the surface, it's very much glazed over eye.
Yeah, it's just like a really like pretty person. And you're like,
yeah, he's like on autopilot. Like he does have thoughts in his head.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But he's on this like charming version of autopilot for the most part. So he's like, oh, just a southern gentleman, you know. Yeah.
His hair is not like strikingly blonde, not like a platinum blonde. It's like a really like a golden blonde and he's tanned.
Yeah. And I wouldn't say that it's like Paul Walker blonde.
No. It's not Paul Walker like California Beach blonde. It's more
I think
like,
at some point we need to create a scale of like blondes.
Yeah. I think it's right. The way that I see him in this movie makes me think of another, like a southern version of Troy. What's his name?
Troy Bolton?
No, not Troy Bolton. What's the Achilles? He makes me think of like Brad Pitt or like a Greek god. The like conventional look of a Greek god.
He does have a very aquiline nose.
Yes.
You get a lot of profile. He has like a strong jaw and an aquiline nose. It's giving me very much Grecian.
Yeah. Urn. And his hair is like swoopy and like curly. I was like, this is too much. Every time he turned, I saw his hair.
If you put him in one of those little like grape leaf circlets.
Yeah.
In a toga, he'd fit right in.
He would fit right in. Thank you for giving me that imagery. So he comes in, he comes to work in a t-shirt, and then his fucking two friends at work who work with him, who are his co-workers, are obsessed with him and like helping him get dressed and asking him if he's having orgies. Like literally Thomas Lennon in awful clothes. This entire movie is like in sweater vests.
Oh my god,
awful shirts.
See the one where this is the one scene? So egregious. This fashion crime, straight to jail. He was wearing a yellow polo. Underneath a blue like plaid button down shirt, and the blue plaid shirt was open and the collar was just tucked underneath the yellow polo collar. And how very dare you?
Yeah. I remember.
I'm so mad. I couldn't even hear what they were saying because I was just seeing red.
Yeah, I saw all of it. It's awful. I don't know if this is the same outfit, but there's one where it's literally like a yellow vest as well. Like, I think he has multiple vests in this movie.
So many.
He's wearing a yellow vest, and I'm like, don't do this to Thomas Lennon. He doesn't deserve it.
Yeah.
Benjamin Barry takes off his shirt, and his chest is all golden.
Benjamin Barry and Andy Anderson, AA and BB. How did I not notice that until this moment?
You didn't?
He's so sweaty the whole movie. Now that you say that.
He's glistening.
He's like very much. Are they trying to sell him as a Greek god? Like, is that what they're doing?
Bro, like, I don't know.
They basically should have put him in a t-shirt that said Parthenon.
They should have. he takes off his shirt, and then all the women in his office are watching him through the blinds at the water cooler.
Lecherously stirring their coffee and like just licking their lips.
And I was like, oh, gross behavior, but I don't blame you.
And you're like, you're looking at them and you're like, have you seen that TikTok that's like, I hate people at work at the bank.
Yes.
Psst, I work at the bank.
I work at the bank.
That's the one. That is what you just did. Exactly.
I relate to that TikTok so hard where I'm like, ugh. I don't care about men. I am not obsessed about men whatsoever. I work at the bank.
I am actually a simp. I'm a big old simp.
My God, why do you even care about men? There are so many other things in this world to care about. I care about men. I hate it. It's a character flaw. But yeah, I just wanted to talk about women ogling him because, like, same. Mm-hmm. If he worked seen. In my... Yeah, I felt seen. If I worked in his office, I'd be like... Hello?
You'd be peering through the blinds, too. Yeah. Why are there so many offices in movies where there are windows between the office and the rest of the place, and then there's blinds on them? That's so, like, Mad Men.
It's so Mad Men. It's so, like, New York...
Newspaper office. Yonks, New York. So-
It's so My Girl Friday, like, kind of office, like, shut the blinds, Ingrid.
Oh, my God, that's amazing. I rewatched My Girl Friday recently. It's so, like, up. I feel like Amy Sherman Palladino must have watched that movie so many times and just been obsessed with it.
Oh, I bet.
And that's why she made Gossip Girl the way she did.
We should tweet her.
Gossip Girl, queen. Gilmore Girls. How embarrassing for me. Ugh. I'm very embarrassed.
Anyway. Okay, so they, Andy and Barry, Andy and Ben, they meet, and they immediately hit it off. So much chemistry right off the bat, and I was like, right off the bat, and I was like, these two hot white people are so good looking together. It's a lot to take in.
Both of them have the most cheekiest smiles.
Yeah, they do. Cheekiest
smiles. And I was like, yeah, two little tricksters. Here we go. About to trick each other.
So they leave the restaurant, they leave the bar, and then they go to a restaurant, and you think that they would go to like a darkly lit sexy restaurant, but then they have plastic bibs on and they're crushing crab legs.
Yeah, that was actually a good transition. I like that.
I really love
and,
that scene.
And he was really going in. I noticed that they didn't show her eating, but they showed him with his like elbow deep in melted butter.
Ugh.
Just shoving pieces of crab into his mouth.
I really like
like a ring of butter around so, his mouth.
This is so terrible, man. Like, I
Cat, where is this going? What's gonna happen right now?
So he did, Matthew McConaughey did this movie, and then he also did a movie called Failure to Launch, which I don't know if we'll ever
and
get to.
And The Ghosts of Girlfriends Past.
Oh, yeah.
Never and Five Get, all of the rom-coms that he's done.
And The Wedding Planner. And? Is there another
one? Oh, my God. Shit. The Wedding Planner. Dude, how did they make him look unattractive in The Wedding Planner? You know what? That's a bridge for another day for me to burn, because I have so many feelings about The Wedding Planner.
I also, and we know we're going to do that movie. Don't worry.
Yes.
Don't worry.
Whether we get to Failure to Launch, probs not. Because it's got Sarah Jessica Parker, and I just,
Do not like. I would love to talk about Failure to Launch with you, because it's just like a wild movie where it's just like, who thought of this?
Isn't the premise that they hire a woman to pretend to be his girlfriend so he moves out of their house?
Yes.
Just, bro, just have an honest conversation with your son. Wow.
I don't know. That's white people.
That's like,
it should have been an Asian family. It really should have been an Asian family. But no Asian family is going to want their kids.
If it was an Asian family. Oh, a little close to home, eh? If it was an Asian family, do you think that the person who wouldn't be leaving home would be the son or a daughter? And would the person that was hired to be, it would be a son, and it would be the exact same scenario, just with an Asian family?
Yeah, it would be the exact same scenario, but with an Asian family. Because if it was a daughter who didn't leave home, it would be normal.
Except the parents would fire the person that they hired because they decided that she's actually not even good enough to be a fake girlfriend.
Yeah, yeah. She would be like, okay, this is my character profile. This is who I come up with. And they're like, no, you have to gone to Harvard.
Yeah, they're like, can you just give me the pen? I'm just going to make some notes.
So what I was going to say is that I don't know why. Actually, that's a lie. I do know why. The scenes of Matthew McConaughey eating in these two movies have stayed in my head since I was a young woman. Watching these movies because there's something about the way he like acts with his mouth.
Catherine, I swear to God,
that's the way that he acts with his mouth.
If
and
you
he's very like, I don't know, man. It's just he really. It's just it's not unattractive to me. I don't know. I'm sorry.
I somehow knew that's where this was going. I was like, she's gonna tell me that Matthew McConaughey is a sexy eater, isn't she? Yep. He's eating lobster.
He's eating lobster and crab, and what like is he there's eating you in see the other so one? Much of his like food in his mouth, and like that sounds gross, but I don't know, man.
He's a chew talker,
and I can't explain it. I think it's because he's like smiling. He's just like handsome. I think it's just because he's handsome. Anyways, I'd like to move on.
Moving swiftly onwards. I wanted to talk about the scene where they leave together and go back to his place. And then when she gets there, she calls Michelle from the bathroom and gives her the scoop. And then she's like, Michelle's like, you're gonna sleep with him, aren't you? You hussy. And then she goes, no, I'm not gonna do that. And then she goes back into the room and immediately tries to sleep with him. And then he's like, no, I'm trying to make this woman fall in love with me. So I'm gonna like pump the brakes.
Oh my God, the fucking power dynamic between the two of them. So good.
That one scene where he's like tapping, they're both tapping beside where they're sitting, trying to get the other person to come to them.
She's on the
plot of the movie.
Yeah, she's sprawled on the bed. And she's sprawled on the bed and she's like, come over here. And he's like, when he like goes
No.
He sees her. She gets on the bed. He sees her. He just like slowly walks back. And then before he even like taps the side of the seat beside him, he's just like looking at her. And I was like, this again is too obscene.
It's very intimate.
Sexually charged.
Yeah. Like, I would never, I'm glad that I was not, like, of the era to go see this in theaters, because first of all, young me would have had way too much internalized misogyny to pay to go see a rom-com in the theaters, but I think I would have been very, I would have felt like I was looking at something that I wasn't supposed to be watching.
I felt like that fucking yesterday, man, and I'm 28 years old.
Yeah. Watching it at home in the privacy of your own home.
Yeah. Like, that scene, that entire scene in their in his apartment, that first night when he brings her home, I was like, yo. But yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah, the scene where they each have a beer in their hand, and he's like, she's like, no, we should definitely go slow. And he's like, yeah. And then she, like, starts kissing him, and then he's like, we should really go slow. And she's like, yeah, you're for sure right. And then he smooches her.
They're kissing so passionately.
Yeah, and then she ends up not staying the night, but she ends up purposely leaving her purse at his house, her tiny, tiny purse at his house. The next day, he brings the purse with him to work. And him and his, like, cronies are theorizing about whether or not she did it on purpose so that she would get, quote, a next day call back. Mm-hmm. And he's like, so what's in the purse? His co-workers, what's in the purse, Ben? What's in the purse? And Ben's like, I'm a Southern gentleman. I don't look in ladies' purses. There are dark and mysterious things in there that are arcane knowledge and should be left undisturbed. Which I thought was, that whole scene around the purse was so funny. They've got it on the desk.
Funny.
It's framed like the monolith in 2001 A Space Odyssey on the desk. Yep. And then the other one, like, lunges across the desk and like accidentally knocks it over, so they have to go through it. And then the next shot is cut to them like examining the contents of the purse, like, across
with
the scene,
pencils.
Like picking things up with pens and pencils. Oh, so funny.
It's so funny.
I really like that framing. That was really funny.
So did I.
And, like,
I love... It's so, like, obviously it's so early 2000s where it's, like, even Ben's boss was, like, we men don't understand women, Benjamin. That's how it's supposed to be. We don't know that. Yeah. No men understands women. So, like, obviously I don't love all of that and, like, being the talk of, like, women being separate creatures and all that, like,
not understanding
them.
Them, like, really starting really early in the movie with, like, kind of one of the core understandings you have to have going into the movie is that, you know, there's a right way and a wrong way to act around the opposite gender.
Yes.
If you want to court them, there's a right way and a wrong way, and if you do anything outside of the norms, then you can only expect failure. You're setting yourself up for failure if you are, for example, expressing your feelings, quote unquote, too early, or being quote unquote too clingy, you know, stuff like this.
Yeah.
So, and like that was kind of embodied in the Michelle character.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I thought that was funny. And then they go through the purse, and then he finds these two tickets to a Knicks game, which Andy had strategically left in the purse and left the purse at his house. Because that was all part of her plan.
Yeah.
That she would take him to the Knicks game that night, and then they would have a great time, and then she would turn on him like a chihuahua.
She would flip the switch.
One second, they're just looking so cute with their big eyes, and then the next second, they are snarling little...
pieces, like, of shit.
Just alien zombie attack beasts.
Yes.
You know what they are? They're like, what's that word that I'm looking for? It's like when a warrior in, like, ancient times would, like, berserkers. Chihuahuas are like tiny zombie berserkers.
My God.
But only sometimes when the mood strikes.
Yeah.
So she was like, here's my plan. I'm going to make him fall in love with me. And then in 24 hours, because keep in mind, every minute is of the essence in this 10-day time span, you know, the next day I'm going to start acting like a nut, mm-hmm. like a crack enhanced Kathy Lee Gifford.
Yep.
I think those were his words.
She seduces him with her real self, her real cool girl self, because she's like, I have Knicks tickets and I have sports and I can go to a restaurant where I wear a plastic bib and I can ride your motorcycle and not have a problem with any of it. And I can be charming and talk about how I want to talk about politics and I'm a writer and blah, blah, blah. And then the next day she just flips this at the Knicks game. She just flips the switch and is like, joke's on you. I'm actually a woman.
Pranked. You thought I was a dude with boobs, but actually I'm a lady.
I'm a lady with thoughts and feelings.
Sorry to spoil your fun time. So they go to the Knicks game and she kind of like gets him to leave right as they're doing. Okay, forgive me in advance because basketball is not my forte, but I believe it was something to the effect of, you know, the clock was ticking. It was High School Musical high stakes. Troy Bolton. The scene where Gabriella stands up in the stands and she goes, try. And the spotlight on her. So what I'm trying to say is it was high stakes and it was like the last few minutes of the game, like a minute and a half left in the game. So she gets him to leave twice to get her a drink and he effectively misses all of like the high points of the game because she wants him to get a drink and she's being so high maintenance and blah, blah, blah.
Molly, I don't know if you know this, but I'm not like other girls. So let me mansplain sports to you.
Can you tell me? Anyone feel free to mansplain basketball to me because just know that I'm not listening.
Just know that I'm thinking about little cartoon frogs.
I'm thinking about like a tiny frog holding a knife.
Aw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cute, but watch out.
Yeah. So she basically asks him, they're tied and it's game one of seven, which is the finals. And
it's regionals.
It's regionals. Oh my God. It's regionals.
Regionals.
Not before regionals. So in the last 30 seconds, because time moves so fucking slow in basketball, like it moves fast, like it moves normally. But every single time it pauses, the whole game stops. Like, the clock stops.
It's the same for hockey and football, too. It's just, it is wild because, like, you can have, you know, you have 5 minutes left in a game and it actually lasts, like, 25 minutes with commercial breaks and timeouts and this, that, and the other, you know?
No, ma'am.
You're like, time should be time and I don't want to hear about it.
That's why I like soccer. No, I was forced to like soccer. Anyways. That's not true. Yeah, so in the last 30 seconds, she's like, get me a drink. And then he, because he's a gentleman, he's trying so hard to be, like, nice to her and a gentleman and not tell her to go fuck off. Because also, on his bet, he's supposed to make her fall in love with him. And in his mind, that means saying yes to everything that she asked for. That's why he stuck around. Like, anybody who watches this movie and is like, why did he stick around? Bro, he has a bet. That's why. I think people also forget that. They're like, he dealt with a lot of things. She's being awful. I was like, yeah, but he also had a bet of manipulating her and making her fall in love with him.
Yeah. The stakes are, like, equally as high for both of them for some reason. Yeah.
So anyway, she makes him miss the last shot, even though she doesn't really want a drink and doesn't care. And she also is, like, excited about the last shot because we know she's a cool girl and, like, sports shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Then she is like, see you for a third date. And then leaves in a cab. The next thing that happens is that he invites her over for dinner and he's like, he makes her lamb. He makes her the biggest fucking meal for just two people, for also the skinniest fucking blonde woman in the history of women, you know? He makes her this huge pot for his entire southern family and then slices one leg of lamb and puts it on her plate. And then that's when she throws a fit and she's like, oh no, I'm a vegetarian. Barf, barf, barf.
Like, I know that a lot of parts of this movie were supposed to be cringe, but I found that the most viscerally cringe moment was when she started singing Mary Had a Little Lamb in a baby voice.
Oh, yeah.
That was hard for me.
anytime she broke out into the baby voice and like was a little bit whiny, and like when she was trying to get into his pants and nicknamed his penis Princess Sophia, I
that was
also
one of the
like
worst things I've ever seen.
Yeah, I also was like, my boner's like, gone.
Literally, like your whole body language just changed when you told that story. I feel like it's like that one scene, like that might have been the worst.
Yeah,
because
it was
also just like if I was in that situation, I'd be like, this woman is unhinged.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
She was doing some faces that I was like, what?
Yeah. Queen? Andy's a really good actor. Like, did she only major in journalism? She should have also majored
major
in theater.
Baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Troy Bolton, why choose between sports and musical theater?
What are
this
my
is,
majors?
Guys, this is actually just secretly just a High School Musical podcast.
High School Musical is a rom-com. Convince me otherwise.
Technically, yes. Technically, yes, it has. It definitely has the rom, obviously. And the com is debatable, but it is there.
Listen, the com is debatable.
It's subjective,
but
it's
intention.
But it's there, definitely.
Yes.
Yes.
Do we find it funny all
the
time?
Comedy humor. Nothing will beat the comedy humor of, I like to pop, lock, and drop. And they're like, ew, stick to the status quo. Nasty.
Gross. Keep that to yourself.
Sharpay singing about how she just wants everything in her life to be glamorous. Babes, I get that. I totally get that.
Why
she's
was
hanging
Sharpay
out
the
at
the villain?
I don't, honestly don't think she was. I think she had a bad rap and just people don't like ambitious women.
People don't. Literally, she's worked her entire fucking high school career to get the lead in her last mm-hmm. year of high school.
Only to have Gabrielle Montez, a relative unknown, sweep in and completely undermine all of this foundation that she's built, the rapport with the theater teacher.
She has no acting ability.
The
she
vice-like
just sings
control
well.
That she has over the other students in the theater department.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways.
Wait. Does Vanessa Hudgens sing well, though?
I saw a TikTok today of her singing about... I saw a TikTok today of her singing that song about putting on your shoes and going clubbing. And
sorry, please give me a refresh.
Bro, I can't even tell you. I just remember when I saw it, I was like,
so
oh
I put
yeah,
my
that's
shoes on. I go to the club and the DJ's playing my song. Is it that one?
Honestly, not that far off.
And the cab driver's playing my song. Jay-Z,
and
like,
we're
yeah.
both listening to my song, and I have my shoes
both...
on,
and
we're going
and
to the club. I invited the cab driver, too.
I put my shoes on, and I asked the cab driver if he could pass me the aux cord, so I put on my live sample, yeah, and he asked me to turn it off, yeah.
Oh, man.
So the next few scenes are kind of like a montage of her, like, escalating,
the awfulness
basically.
Yeah. She
so
brings
he
over
makes
stuff
her dinner. She keeps making him miss every Knicks game, which is like a major plot point. She says, I'm vegetarian, I can't eat this lamb that you spent hours making, so we need to go to the
even though earlier we saw her munching
was
on
like
a burger
bacon,
and she's like, they always forget my bacon.
Chomp, literal definition of the word chomp. And that whole scene, her mouth is, like, so full of just bun. So much bun to content. The bun to content
that.
Ratio on that burger was wrong, though.
Yeah, she didn't take a full
it was
bite.
All bread.
It was all
and
bread.
And she was just like acting. Like, anyways. So she her boss is, like, loving these notes. Keep it going. She goes to his house. She buys them a dog, then makes him watch it. She brings the dog to his workplace where it pees all over the place. She, like, embarrasses him in front of his friends. She crashes boys' night, which is, like, poker night. And they're, like, literally playing poker and smoking cigars.
Yeah.
So, like, the, like, cartoon version of what dudes do when they're, like, hanging out together. I don't know if they actually do that. Probably.
Have you seen those TikToks that are like, films replicating pieces of art? I feel like in this, so there's a person or multiple people who do like a TikTok.
Wait,
series.
is it the painting of the dogs playing poker?
Yeah. In this movie, they just replicated They just replicated the dogs playing poker and smoking cigars.
I see.
So
it.
That was,
I see it.
Yeah, yeah. That was art.
So she crashes. She's like getting them so many things. She's like imagining their future together to like extreme degree, where she photoshops their faces of like their faces as children onto like stock photos and like prints them out in an album. She like calls his mom and like gets all this information about him, and he doesn't know that she's like in conversation with his mom, which is very weird.
Oh, it's terrible.
She buys them a love fern, which she then expects him to care for.
Yep.
And when he doesn't, she finds out that the love fern has died when she crashes the boys' night. Where, by the way, she steals their pizza and replaces it with carrots and celery. So she's evil.
And cucumber sandwiches. Cucumber she tells them.
Disgusting. Oh my God. What is this, high tea or boys' night? Huh?
When she tells them to like, stomp out their cigars. And mm-hmm. she's like, she's like doing like a PU.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's miming it. She's like. She gags. It's so funny. Listen, all of the things she's doing is awful. And like Andy herself, you see like glimpses, especially in Boys Night, where she keeps like coming out into the living room,
she's
where
like
their poker
at
table
herself.
Is she's cringing so hard at herself again, because we know that she's a cool girl.
Yeah, she's
we
a
know
cool
this
girl.
So see, we have to be reminded that this is not actually what Andy's
generated.
Like yeah,
right,
everything she's doing is so funny too. It's awful and it's horrible. And, like, Matthew McConaughey's reactions to all of it is very funny. Like, the comedy in this movie, I think, is strong.
There's so much. I think that Matthew McConaughey, despite his, like, very obvious, like, serious acting chops, he does physical comedy very, very well.
He does.
Like, the way he has this, he has this, like, kind of signature stance where he's just kind of, like, the bamboozled stance. Do you know the one? He's kind of, like, leaning forward and his eyebrows are up and he's kind of, like, squinting. He's like, what the actual frick-frack is going on right now? He's just trying to, like, process everything in real time, but he's buffering.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think that one of, like, so at the boys' night, she kind of, like, brings it to a head. And then in the, as he chases her out into the elevator and he's like, what the heck is going on? Like, why are you acting like this? And she's like, what, so you think I'm crazy? He's basically trying to, like, be a good communicator. And she was like, mm-hmm. no, this is not the plan. So he's like, so she's like, so you're breaking up with me? And he's like, yeah, yes, I am. And then goes back into his apartment. She's leaving. She's like, finally, thank God.
She's like, finally, fuck.
This was taking way too long. But then he goes back into his apartment and his like squad hypes him up and they're like, but what about the diamond advertising account? You better go out there and get her to do couples counseling with you. So what does he do? Run down the fire escape, like the freaking Blade Runner. And he gets down there and beats her to the bottom and then convinces her to go to couples counseling with him after knowing each other for 7 days.
Man.
Which is hilarious.
So, yeah. So he convinces her. He's like, because he got talked up by his boys and Thomas Lennon was like, suggest couples therapy. He chases after her, suggests going to couples therapy after 7 days only. And she's like, okay.
Which, I don't really know why she did that, because she could have got her way.
I know. I don't
was
know why.
That, do you think she did it because secretly she was like, well, no, I'm falling for Ben Barry.
I think some of
it
was that.
Or was it because Ben Barry, Rachel Berry's cousin. Another link to Glee. Do we think that she did it because she was like, ooh, this will be good fodder for my article? Or because she was like, I don't actually want this to be over.
I think a little bit of both, honestly. Otherwise, why else would she have said yes? If she wanted to be out of it, she was like, oh, this is done. I've had it. I can't keep doing this to him. Why else, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing I can imagine is that one, she's
literally,
like, okay, let's see how this goes.
Hear me out.
Mm-hmm.
She could have, like, called that quits and then just, like, written her article and then just been normal.
Yeah.
Andy sets it up so it's actually her friend Michelle being the therapist.
Which is really funny.
So funny. And I just love Katherine Hahn so, so much.
So do I, man. She does such a good job in her big fucking glasses.
Oh, yeah. The big glasses. And, like, the therapist demeanor.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. They're all lying to Ben.
It is very cringy, but the long and short of it is that it accumulates in the two of them And Ben kind of, like, inviting her to go see his family in Long Island for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I guess Andy doesn't want to do it, but Michelle low-key, like, traps her into it.
Yeah.
So they end up going. They take the motorcycle, I guess.
They get on the ferry.
Oh, right.
Yeah, they get on the ferry, and then he drives off the ferry on the motorcycle. And then they get to
the
house.
They post up at his parents' house, and immediately he's handed a baby with a poopy diaper, so he goes to change the baby.
Which he goes and changes. I was like, aww. I'm a simp.
That's his nephew sucker. I think.
Yes, his perhaps? Nephew, I believe.
His sister's kid. And mm-hmm. then, so she kind of, like, is surrounded by a bunch of kids running around. She goes out back, and she meets the family. They're all really sweet and lovely and inviting, and they invite her to play a game, a card game called Bullshit with them, which is essentially, it goes by another name, but I can't remember what it is.
There's another name for it?
Yeah. Like, my family used to play it at the cottage, but we never called it Bullshit. It was just a game where you have to, like, pretend that you're, like, sometimes you have to lie about what cards you're putting down.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
bluff. If someone calls you bullshit, you have to pick up the pile. So there's this, like, long-standing thing of, like, Barry. Ben is the best.
I keep calling him Bullshit, Barry, too.
I know. It's because they kept calling him Benjamin Barry. And it's like, why are you making him sound like some kind of, like... He sounds like a Beatrix Potter character. Or, like, Roald Dahl. He's yeah. got, like, some kind of, like, waistcoat and a hook nose. Anyways. So... So they're playing this game, and then, like, she's, like, schooling him because, actually, secretly, all of his family members are helping her cheat to beat Ben. And then
it's
when
so
he finds
cute.
Out, he has a little, it's just very funny and cute, and there's a lot of, like, bonding and cuteness happening. It's just a very yeah. nice scene. And she, like, is really getting along with his family.
Yeah, she's getting along. She's realizing that he is a good person and comes from a good family. And mm-hmm. she likes this people, and then she's the guilt starts to settle in that she's, like, manipulating this man.
Yeah, because then he teaches her, he brings her to some kind of boardwalk and teaches her how to ride the motorcycle, and then afterwards they're just, like, sitting there and they get, like, splashed by a truck. So they go mm-hmm. back to his parents' house to, like, wash off.
He starts the shower for her, and he's like, okay, well, towel's over there, and that's over there, and you're good, you're golden.
Yeah.
And she's sitting on the toilet.
Has a moment,
yeah,
a quiet moment, and he's like, whoa, girl, hey, a little 2009 Ryan Gosling meme. Hey, girl, I noticed a slight change in your body language and volume of your voice. Is everything okay?
I forgot about that meme.
Never forget.
That's so funny.
Good I job, forget Molly. About memes, and then they just kind of, like, come out of the recesses of my brain, like, so sporadically and uncontrollably.
Good job, Molly. That was really good.
Thank you. Which means you know what we have to do next. One of our next movies has to be Crazy Stupid Love. Because Ryan Gosling rom-com.
I think we got to do a more modern one because we've been doing a lot
yeah,
of 90s
like
and early 2000s.
Yeah, I like how our evolution of what movies we're choosing is kind of like whatever we're feeling like doing, or if something comes up, we just like organically go to that one. I like that system.
Me too. We make the rules.
Yeah, man. We're in control of this weird little universe that we've created.
This weird little ship.
A ship?
A I feel like I shouldn't have gotten
you,
this
You, me,
drink.
And the audience.
You, me, and the audience. And the audience.
Why does that sound like Eliza Minnelli, some kind of, like, Broadway song? Like a Chicago style.
In Broadway, there's nobody else except for you and me and the audience.
And the audience. And then it goes, da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, dun-dun-dun. Liza! I think I have also maybe had one too many drinks. Hey, you know what? It is, a Wednesday. It's hump day, baby.
It's hump day, baby.
It's hump day, baby.
Do Come your, on, it's bath. Hump day, baby, in, like, the most late night radio talk show host you could do.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to CJFJ Midnight Radio. It's hump day, baby. And so we're going to play a little Lionel Richie for you. And then after that, if you're really nice, maybe we'll do Careless Whisper.
I was gonna, when you said Lionel Richie in my head, I went, ba-na-na-na.
Yeah, I think if I was,
that was
if
good.
I smoked a bit more, I think mm-hmm. if I was a smoker for a few years, I would have a better late night radio voice.
Yeah.
Or maybe I could just do like, just pretend like I'm dying. That could be something.
It's hump day, baby.
Nice.
Thanks. So she is sitting and realizing on his family's toilet that she actually likes these people. She likes the house. She likes the smells. And he's like, that's Uncle Arnold.
Well, because Uncle Arnold was farting earlier.
So she's having a moment where she's like, oh no, I'm going to hurt a real human being's feelings. Because obviously she doesn't know that he has a bet on her. And she just thinks that this real guy is falling for her. And then she, in the middle of their like moment, they have a little kiss and like are touching foreheads and stuff. And then she just raises her arms and he takes off her shirt. And I didn't love that.
Was it because she looked like a little kid when she did it?
Yeah, I didn't love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in the context, he knew what it meant because he took off her shirt and then he raised his arms and mm-hmm. then she took off his shirt. So
it at all least
contextually,
works.
It was saved. Yeah,
it all works. It's just like when she first did it and there's a little pause where he's looking at her to be like, oh, he then in the pause is when I didn't like it. But I get it.
Catherine, that's the part. Maybe you didn't like it because you felt uncomfortable because it was vulnerability.
Oh my god.
Then so basically they bone for the first time in the shower at his parents' house in Long Island. In the shower,
bro.
In a shower that he literally just warned her could go Arctic cold at any minute. Romance, maybe. Terror, definitely.
Also, the song that's playing when they're undressing each other is like, I get the meaning of it.
Is it not Kiss
feels
Me?
Feels like home. No. Oh, I don't fully forgot to bring up that Kiss Me made its appearance. I can't hear that song now without hearing you going, Kiss Me.
Burned forever into your brain.
Yeah, but yeah, that song happened during the Knicks game. And then also at that Knicks game, after he kisses her, his tongue is like full out. After he kisses her, he's just like licking his lips. And I was like, that's a
what
scene.
I did not notice that.
Well, you're not watching his mouth enough.
Clearly, I need to be looking at him like a lobster about to be eaten just in case.
Yeah, you should be. So the song
really
that's playing.
On the lobsters, y'all. You got to watch this scene.
Guys, honestly, like if Molly, if there's any way that you could just post this scene or pictures, stills of him just eating this lobster, like.
Just close-ups of his moof. His moof covered in melted butter.
No.
Oh, you want his fingers covered in melted butter? Because
fingers
he's covered
and
in melted butter.
Oh
he's God. Like that scene. He's like the Bon Appetit Katy Perry music video, but just
oh
butter
my
and
God.
Lobsters just all over his face and grabbers.
Yep.
Face it and is grabbers. Obscene. It's
it
obscene.
Is. It is.
It's Trisha Paytas level food, like mukbang type beat.
All I'm hearing is the song that's playing as they're getting into it is feels like home to me. It's that song. And I was like, this is a really sad, emotional song for them to be yeah. boning in the shower for.
Yeah.
So anyways, they bone in the shower and then it's the end of the day. Also, his family is like fully downstairs. Anyways.
I was thinking about that too, but you know, I think that you're supposed to like suspend that thought.
Yeah, definitely. But, yeah. But then they go back to New York and they have a moment on the ferry. Also, they did Kate Hudson a disservice of straightening her hair the way that they did this entire movie.
Bro, I have a theory about why they did that.
Why?
They have Kate Hudson with straight hair every time she's pretending to be something she's not.
You're right.
Anytime she's being honest with her feelings and herself, she's got curly hair. So the curly hair comes out when she's having her like vulnerable moments and like
you're absolutely right.
Of honesty and whatnot. Or her bold moments where she's like, she says like, she's like to her boss, Lana, thanks for the opportunity and for making it so easy for me to turn it down. And then she walks my peace sign, kiss me.
So yeah, so she has curly hair. They're on the Staten Island ferry and he's like just standing behind her and they're such a good looking couple.
Yeah, they look good. They look good.
They look real good together and they're having a moment and they're
end
both
of thesis.
Just like, They're both just like, wow, we really are two hot people who really like each other. And then that's it. And then he drops her off at her house.
Yeah, but that's the whole scene.
That's the whole scene, the whole moment.
Into a mirror and been like, we look pretty good together. I don't know. What do you think?
So he drops her off, and then she's a little sad because she's like, oh, nar, I'm falling for this man.
And nar, I'm deceiving him.
Or nar, I'm in too deep, MR.
Imar, I'm manipulating this man. What do I do?
The condensation, MR.
Nar.
Yeah. So the next night is the big gala thing that
party where everybody's the diamond up party with ice and bling and whatnot.
Everyone
there's
goes
so many details that I feel were unnecessary during this party, but all y'all need to know is that they both go to the party together. This is the party where he needs to prove to his boss that this woman has fallen in love with him. Again, professional boundaries, never heard of them.
Also, so, 10 days fucking later, my God.
Yeah. His boss was, like, not checking in, but then he's just, like, so invested. And the way that he finds out whether or not this woman has actually fallen in love with Matthew McConaughey is by going up to her and saying, so, did you fall in love with him or what? What's the scoop?
And she's like,
absolutely. No, I mean, no. I mean, that would be crazy, right? Like, this is a guy that she's never met. She's like, I don't know. Like, I just, like, I really like him, but, like, that would be crazy, right? Like, I mean, I couldn't. And he's like, okay.
So that's a yes. That's okay. Yes, I'm a go.
He literally is like, okay, so that's a yes in pieces. And then, like, she's walking around. Everyone's having a good time. Matthew McConaughey's, like, schmoozing this old diamond lady in, like, a red feather cap.
Oh, my God, her red fucking
which is actually
feathered
a look,
wig.
A look.
I knew you were going to love her look because, honestly, she was quite the look. And
she was
living her
me
life.
Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Yeah, she was living her life, like, to its fullest. She has a rich husband who controls 70% of the world's diamonds. Like,
which is literally insane.
It is insane. Eat the rich, obviously, but she was rocking it. Also, the dress that Kate Hudson has to wear, not has to wear, that she chooses to wear to this gala, and then everyone is smitten by her. But she does a turn, like he goes and picks her up in this limo. She does a turn so that she shows him she's fucking like
three quarters
of a dress.
My theory is that the costume designer was like, this dress is so banging, I will drop out of this film unless you make her do a turn to show the back of the dress.
Yeah.
So he pulls up in this town car to pick her up. And she's like, check me out. She's standing there ready to go. And she does a full turn.
Yeah.
Before coming down the stairs, which the drama, I mean, really, I appreciate.
Listen,
the drama
I appreciate it completely because you're not going to pull off a dress like that and then have him happenstance upon her back. Like, no, ma'am. Yeah. She's got to do a turn to be like, look.
There's this dramatic moment. Everyone knows the yellow dress. It's the dress on the poster. They go to the party. He goes, you know, go choose a necklace, which honestly, I think it would have been like very dramatic, much more dramatic if he had been the one to like put it on her. I don't really know.
That's what I thought was going to happen.
From a directorial point of view, I felt like the whole party is kind of disjointed. You probably could have cut out like maybe half of it. But over the course of the party, basically, the two of them find out that they have both been either wagers or some kind of situation bet for their jobs, and they're both feeling pretty hurt by it, so they retaliate on each other by making each other sing in public.
Yeah,
which
she gets so drunk so fast.
One of, I would say, maybe the most effective humiliation tactic. Make someone sing in public.
I couldn't remember this part of the movie because I guess I blocked it out, but I was probably like, why this song? I get that the song played before, but like,
that was literally it.
I hated it.
And that particular song, the song was You're So Vain. That particular one is, what is that line from Pride and Prejudice where she goes, careful, darling, that savors strongly of bitterness. That's the vibe of the song. I think that's why they chose that song for this scene.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyways, the scene is awful because she's drunk. They have a big fight. They're both yelling at each other, like bringing the microphones to their mouths to talk to each other. I'm like, no, if you just like keep the microphone down, you can still hear each other. But obviously it's for comedy. I appreciate the drama of it. For the comms.
The calm
and
in rom-com.
The entire gala's watching and cringing and all that stuff. And the fucking, what's her face? Mrs. Diamond wife
Mrs. Diamond Lady.
Lady is having the time of her life because she's like, this is hilarious. And then Kate.
She thinks it's a comedy routine.
She does. She thinks they're an improv troupe. And also, we didn't talk about how, like, fully on Benjamin Barry's dick she is.
She was perched.
She sees
it.
Him and she's like, oh,
that was good.
Thank you. Thank you.
Was I'm ethnic. I can roll my R's. But yeah, so she's like fully on him. And then like when Kate Hudson, for some reason, is trying to humiliate him, she calls him up and the spotlight flashes on him and the diamond wife, and she's like fully, like, her boobs are pressed up against his chest.
Yeah, she's literally like not convulsing, she's like, what's that word,
gyrating
on him.
Yep.
One brain cell.
And then they all sing at each other in a really terrible way, like, and they're everyone's both yelling cringing. Like, you deceived me. No, you deceived me.
They run
me.
Out the door. It's a continuation of the argument. They run out the front door. She accidentally kept one of the, like, the diamond necklace on. So, again, she kept the diamond necklace on, and then there's, like, this whole point, that like, this kind of, like, useless thing of, like, the security guard coming out and be like, can I have the necklace back? And she's like, fine. And it just didn't need to happen. Yeah. And then, like, that was, like, my perspective, my personal editing view.
Did you like the necklace?
You know what? With the outfit, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I would, personally, if I was going to wear that whole fit, I would make the dress an emerald green and then make the stone in the middle of the diamond necklace an emerald. So it pulls it together. It's just more my color scheme. Yellow, light yellow is a tough look. Kate Hudson absolutely smashed it, pulled it off beautifully.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah. I like the outfit. I think that dress is pretty iconic.
That dress is insane. Also, when she turned around, I was like, where her butt crack? How that dress goes so low and no butt crack?
Why, to be fair,
I gotta see men's butt cracks more than I see Kate Hudson's, you know?
Her butt crack is just so small, demure, that it's just like, it's just so tucked away.
Kate
Hudson we're talking about.
Fair.
To be fair, I was just going to say butt cracks sometimes don't go that high.
Why on men then, huh? Why I got to see it on men?
Por qué?
Por qué? Okay, anyways. I just like when she turned around, I was like, where her butt crack?
You were expecting to see butt crack and then you saw nothing and you're like, okay, Kate Hudson is an alien like Kyle XY. She doesn't have a belly button either. Except we know from this movie that she does have a belly button because you see her laying out in the sun. Anyways, that's aside from the point. So the two of them part ways. They have a massive fight. They've both figured out that the other person is angling for something and they've both been manipulating each other this whole time. And then as they go their separate ways, you see her write her article, submit it to Composure magazine. Her boss is like, Andy, this is not what I was expecting. As a matter of fact, it's better.
That's my favorite.
You can now write anything you want. Andy goes, really, Lana? So I can write about politics and Tajikistan? And then she said, no. And then Andy was like, she pulled a Mark Darcy and went, I guess I've been laboring under false pretenses. And she said, I will be quitting now. And then, but at that point, she had already somehow wrote into the article, this will be my last article with Composure. Because you see that as a call out when Ben is reading the article later. Oh, yeah. Fun fact. So that's a good segue. So Ben is now, next shot, you see Ben on set filming a diamond commercial with Diamond Wife. And I love how Diamond Wife is her name now.
I don't know what her name is. Sorry, dude.
Diamond Wife. And she's filming this commercial and he's directing it for some reason. And everyone's happy to be there, I guess. And his friend brings him the article and is like, you should read it. And he's like, not this filth, not in my studio. I don't want to read it. And then he only needs to be pushed the tiniest bit to read it, though, and reads it. And it's like this heartfelt confession of Andy being like, this is the only man I've ever fallen for in my entire life. And he's like, whoa, I'm going to chase her. And goes to her. Am I wrong? He goes to her.
No,
office.
You're not wrong. I'm laughing.
Her desk
of
is
truth.
Completely empty except for the dead love fern, which he takes with him on the back of his motorcycle as he chases her across the Brooklyn Bridge. She's in a cab on her way to fly to DC for a new job interview, and he stops her. They have the romantic. She makes the cab pull over on the side of the road, and in the background there's construction, so sparks are literally flying, which I thought was funny. And then he you know, they have this like kind of like dramatic love proclamation showdown where she's like, "You're a manipulator," and he's like, "You're running away from something that could be great." And then he literally calls bullshit on her because it's a callback. Get it? It's a callback to earlier. And then she was like, "Ah, how can I resist Matthew McConaughey? I've seen you eat lobster." And then she falls into his arms. And then it goes, "Kiss me."
Oh my god.
He goes, "Sorry, I'll get bored of that joke eventually."
He's like, "Where are you going?" And she's like, "I'm going to DC. DC's the only place that I can write about what I want." He's like, "You can write anywhere, bitch." Mm-hmm. "So where are you going?" And when he said it the second time, I was like, "Oh boy, no wonder."
Or was it not giving you "bother me, baby" vibes?
"Bother me, baby."
So where are you going? "I'm going to DC." Bullshit. "Where are you going?"
Oh my god,
baby. It was anyone just like, who has seen the movie The Choice will know. It's The Choice, right?
It is The Choice.
If you guys want to see an absolutely horrendous movie, go watch The Choice. It's a Nicholas Sparks film adaptation, but there's a really funny guy in it with a very Southern accent, and it makes the movie worth
very,
it.
Very Southern accent. Honestly, though, awful movie. It's definitely one I will watch to turn my brain off, though. And because he is, however silly that "bother me, baby" line is, he's not bad looking.
Catherine, you are... You know what you are sometimes, what it gives me is, you know, that I can't remember what it's from, but it was like, "You've got to do this thing." "I won't do it. That's too much." And they're like, "You've got to." And he goes, "Well, you're a tough bargainer." That's you. Every time there's a guy in a movie, if he's attractive and like the script is bullshit, the movie's bullshit, but like it's a hottie with a body, you'll be like, "Well, you're a tough bargainer. I'll have to take it."
Twist my fucking arm. I will watch this movie and obsess over it and tell all my friends, "Hey guys, watch this silly movie. It's definitely garbage. Don't take it seriously, but definitely watch it.
But definitely watch it so we can talk about it."
My favorite is you just after every... This has happened a lot. I don't know what it is, if it's just this movie bringing it out of me, but today has been more moments of me saying a thing and you just going, "Catherine."
It's something about this movie that's making everything in stark. Maybe this is the part of our like podcast where we start seeing themes emerge.
Yeah.
And that's why. The theme today is simp. Brought to you by the letter S. S-I-M-P. Sunny days taking the clouds away.
Oh man, did we talk about what the trope is for this movie? Is it?
I have a few options.
Okay,
so
yeah,
we've already
let's go
talked
over them.
About the bet as the trope of the week, right? So mm-hmm, I have a few alternatives for you. One of which is the cool girl is mm-hmm, an option for a trope, but I would argue that the ending of the movie makes the thesis of the film: you should be true to yourself and not worry about being a cool girl, because not only does Andy get the guy, mm-hmm, despite the fact that she is acting like a womp rat, and then also her friend Michelle also gets her guy, even though she was not faking that added, that kind of like the behavior that Andy had seen as so like unacceptable. So you know, so Michelle got her guy in the end too through being authentic.
Yeah. He shows up 10 days later and is like, "Hey, I actually miss you and I didn't realize that I liked you." And honestly, like, that is relatable. That is relatable, but I was just like, no, you know what? It is relatable because sometimes guys don't see what they have in front of them until it's gone.
Yeah, dude, that's their whole thing. Am I wrong? Like,
no, you're not wrong. It sounded like I was saying something so controversial and unique, and you were like, yeah, buddy, you got it.
You simplified it really beautifully. Yeah. It's like,
thanks.
Don't it always seem to go that you just don't know what you've got until it's gone? Anyways, they paved paradise and put up a parking lot, and then the rest of my thesis goes that perhaps the trope of the week could be that men are from Mars and women are from Venus or whatever that thing is. But because, mm-hmm. like, I feel like that is, like, and this is what I would say is my prevailing trope of the week, because we've talked about a few other ones. Obviously, the bet is super central to this, but we've already talked about the bet in episode one. So I would say, like, we could explore a little bit the trope of men are from Mars, women are from Venus,
mm-hmm.
Being this whole thing of, like, men and women are fundamentally different. They act in different ways. They want different things, and they behave. They behave differently. They think differently, and they want different things.
Mm-hmm.
Which I looked it up a little bit because I wanted to talk about it. So, like, in pop psychology, it was this book that was super popular in the 90s. Everyone was subscribing to this theory that men and women are fundamentally different. From a physiological marker perspective, which are also called either taxonometric values or taxometric values. Basically, it has to do with, like, physical strength, the size of their brain and stuff like that, which mm-hmm. is, like, you know, there are marked physical differences between people who are assigned feminine at birth and assigned female at birth and assigned male at birth. So yep. there are freaking physical differences. I'm not going to try and tackle that word, but but then, you know, the theory that men and women think and fundamentally want different things was kind of debunked because in the, like, later 2000s and early 2010s, there were, like, kind of studies that counteracted the book Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, mm-hmm. because they were just talking about how the fact that these differences are not axiomatic or fundamental, they're socialized.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, when you ask, they had studied, like, over 13,000 people in this one study to say, what do you want, basically? Mm-hmm. What do you want in life? What are you searching for? And then specifically, they would ask them, what do you want in a partner? What are you searching for in a partner? And they, like, roughly speaking, they all wanted the same things.
Yeah.
There were a few differences, but for the most part, like, when you get a good sample size of a group of people, they were saying that fundamentally, you know, men and women want the same things. And of course, that is also reductive because it was, you know, it's like working within the gender binary. So we won't get into that right now. That's a lot to unpack. But yeah, so basically, I'd say that's probably the trope of the week, of this thing of saying, you know, men and women are fundamentally different. They're different in the way they date, the things that they look for, and the way that they act, their behaviors. And there is one fundamentally right way to act around each of these genders in order to get them to date you.
Yeah.
And there's one way to do it, and that's it. And if you stray from the path, so, like, Lord help your soul, basically. Yeah.
There's a formula to dating, either men or women, because men, they don't like women who are clingy or too touchy-feely or shit like that. And then women fall for men who are openly obvious about wanting to be in a committed relationship and stuff like that, mm-hmm. instead of just, like, sometimes it just happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I would also say that pursuant to that, I think that the thesis of the movie is saying, you know, we might have these socialized ideas of how men and women act, but at everyone's core, what they want is someone to be genuine with, someone to be real and honest with.
Exactly.
So I think it's actually kind of interesting. And I think that's probably part of the reason, the ending is part of the reason why I like the movie so much, because it doesn't necessarily subscribe to those, like, kind of really, you know, black and white understanding of relationships between men and women. Romantic relationships. So I was like, I kind of like that. It's a nice twist on your typical Hollywood fodder for them to say, you know what, maybe people all just want someone to be, like, honest and real with.
Yeah.
Kind of nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree too. I obviously like this movie. I think it's really good and they have good chemistry and it's funny and all of the things. Mm. I also wish that they got to see a little bit more of each other. Mm-hmm. Like, he got to see a little bit more of Andy, and like, that's the reason why he would still want to chase her around the Brooklyn Bridge, because like, the only real semblance of her that he saw was at the beginning when they went out on their first date, and even a little bit on the second date, and then the other time was when he brought her to his parents, and that's the most Andy, that the most real Andy that he got. And I would argue that's not enough. I wish that there was
should rewatch it and see how much screen time she was acting like real Andy and how much screen time she was acting like crazy Andy, and then see if we think that it's an acceptable ratio for him to have seen a few nuggets of real Andy and decide that he was in love with her.
Exactly. I don't think so. I already know, like, I there's not enough because like, there's not any semblance of anything in between. It's like she goes from being this really interesting, cool girl that he is interested in to then someone who is very clingy and he's just agreeing to stay with because he has his own reasons and stuff. So
yeah, they had to end the movie this way though, because it would have been bonk if they ended up going separate ways.
For sure. Like, it obviously had to end this way. But, like, it would have made a little bit more, I don't know, I would have been a little bit more invested. And instead of it just being, like, it's the ending that makes the most sense, it's got to be the ending that happens. Mm-hmm. I would have been a little bit more invested. And also,
even if they had a few more moments of herself poking through, like, herself not being able to maintain the facade of this acting.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Just here and there.
Do you not find Matthew McConaughey as attractive as I did in this movie?
He's very handsome. Like,
he's very handsome, very charming.
It's not lost on me.
Okay, good, good, good.
Yeah, I don't think riding a motorcycle is hot, though. Like, that's not one of those things that I'm like, whoa, whoa, wee, wow. You know?
Do I think that?
Take a moment, reflect.
I think I do.
Uh-huh. Even with that ugly leather jacket?
Yeah.
You said that so sadly. Like, I regret to inform you that I actually do find riding a motorcycle to be very attractive.
I do, because it's just like, it truly is my lizard brain being like, that's stupid, but it's pretty.
Danger.
Because I know, it's dumb. Like, there are no walls. He's gonna get hurt.
There are no walls. That's the biggest sell for a motorcycle I've ever heard. You know what? My cousin used to be a paramedic, and he told me that they call them donor cycles. Ever since he said that, I've had a very visceral aversion to motorcycles.
That's fair. Any final thoughts on How to Lose a Guy in 10 days?
I love Katherine Hahn. I love Matt McConaughey. Matt McConaughey has a dump truck so powerful that no casual business slacks can hide. I just gotta say that.
That is very, very accurately put.
And also, there are quite a few scenes where they use that glamour filter that we've talked about before.
Oh, I saw that. Strong. I saw that today.
Like, they just smeared Vaseline over the lens. Yeah.
They really did. When they were walking on the city street to the bar, I was like, yo, the soft focus is strong in this
one. When they're having the dramatic proclamation of love on the bridge, Andy gets the soft focus.
Yeah.
Benny gets the soft focus. The cab driver does not get the
soft focus. Does not at all.
Brother.
Hey, lady. Are you done here?
Hey, lady. What are you going to do? He hits her with the existential question.
Oh, my God.
Hey, lady. What decision are you making? Because how it's going to impact your life, either way, is basically what he shouted out the cab window. New York cabbies are mystical, as we've established.
I'm making it sound big and existential, but I'm really talking about you getting in or out of my cab.
Bro, that is a voice acting voice right there. That was flawless. It came out no effort.
Thank you so much. I practiced in my shower.
That was it. You smashed it.
My final thoughts are the same as yours. Matthew McConaughey, check. Katherine Hahn, always love. Kate Hudson, dump truck. I mean, yeah, dump truck. Kate Hudson, he's got dump truck enough for the both of
them. Yeah.
Kate Hudson, I like, fine. Yeah. Like, I like her. I don't dislike her.
She was just like, yeah.
Has she done any other rom-coms?
And she smashed all the fashion in this movie. She really did.
She did.
Except for those folded down jeans. That's going to be a no from me, dog.
No, ma'am. And the big wide-legged hem or whatever. No. And her big white nurse sneakers.
Oh, yeah.
That's so funny.
She had the Fila dino stompers. Except they weren't as cute. They looked like if a Fila was a caterpillar somehow. I can't explain. Yeah. They looked like nurse shoes.
Yeah. Same final thoughts. That's about it. Enjoyed this movie. I feel like the least
out of 10?
Problematic. Out of 10?
On our 7? Rom-coms. Specifically on our rom-coms. Not all movies, just rom-coms.
Oh, just rom-coms? 7 out of 10.
I'm going to give it an 8.
Really?
Yeah, because didn't you see him eating lobster?
You know, I really was trying to choose 8. You know what? You're right. I will go for 8 because...
It's one of my favorite ones. I feel like it's a bit underrated, but I think it's one of my favorites because of how at the end it kind of is like debunking the cool girl and being like, you know what? Actually, people just want to like be seen, you know?
You know what? I agree with you. It is an 8. It's an 8 because it holds up. Of all the ones that we've watched so far, besides Clueless is a 9?
Yeah.
I want to say, or like an 8.5.
There are very few that we're going to review that I would give a 10 out of 10, but I already know what at least one of them is going to be.
Yeah, 8 out of 10, good movie.
Okay. So Kat, where could these lovely people who are taking the time out of their days to listen to us talk, where can they find you on social media?
On the social media, they can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Visco, TikTok, all at It's Catherine Ram. It's the same everywhere. Molly, where can they find you?
You guys can find me on Instagram at molly.mca, molly.mca, and then also on TikTok at Molly the Witch. And if you need anything else, probably just stop looking. But we do have... an Instagram associated with VomCom at VomCom Podcast. It's got additional little tidbits, videos, fun photos, and sometimes we'll mention stuff on the podcast that we put on the Instagram. So yeah, definitely go follow us. Leave us a 5-star review if you want. If you liked it.
If you want, if you feel so inclined, leave us a comment, leave us a 5-star review. That really helps us out. That would be nice. It makes me feel good. So
yeah. Whenever we get a review, it lifts us up the same way Matthew McConaughey lifts a piece of lobster to his mouth.
Oh, no, I'm never going to live this down.
It will never stop following you now.
Oh, good Lord.
It's too late to stop the lobster. The lobster is going to be following you forever.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us, guys. Thank you. I had fun, too. I had an 8 out of 10 time.
8 out of 10 time recording, 12 out of 10 hanging out with you.
Absolutely, every time.
Bye, buddy. I love you.
Bye. Mwah.
That was good.
Mwah.
Mwah.
'm fond of you, you know.
And a girl.
I often wish you weren't such a stinker.